Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Glad to see you still have a sense of humor.
Is that what this says?
Hello, everybody. This is Again With It. Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's topic. Season 4. Episode 7. Moving Target. Now here are your hosts, Tari Ariano and Sarah D. Bundy.
David
making his own fun.
Oh.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello, Tara and Doppler. How are you?
Oh, we are very well. Before we get into this, a reminder that you can buy many t-shirts that will be of interest to you, listeners to this podcast, at glarkware.com. That's glarkware.com. There's Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know, of course, Don't Be Such a Squeef, great advice, and The Blaze. A lot of parents read it, and a lot of parents wear it.
And here's a little something to help you remember. Every time you open a pop, you'll think of Glarkware. I just wanted to open up that pop because I was thirsty. And I tried to figure out a way to incorporate it into the show.
Just because it's your birthday week does not mean that you get to be this unprofessional. Or maybe it
Best
does.
Best sound drop ever.
You're welcome. It's better than the shut the fuck up Cole one, too.
It's shorter.
It's definitely shorter. Anyway, let's start with
Why can't we use both?
We can. Oh, yeah. Let's start with our D-plot.
Brendan. Oh, for Christ's sake, fuck off, Cole.
I forgot it was fuck off. That's even better.
Oh, there's a couple.
Oh, uh-huh. Awesome. Anyway, moving on from True Detective Season 1. Our D story, Brenda dates a rich guy. So even though we didn't get to see the gang girls form their own sorority at the end of last episode because they sang Que Sera Sera in the scene and therefore it got cut from the DVDs, that
What,
occurred.
Really?
Yes.
That's not in the public domain yet?
I don't know. I guess not.
I guess it's from the 50s, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, right. Seems like it should be older though, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Back to the show.
Anyway. God damn, Cole. How many ways are there for me to say, shut the fuck up?
We're going to run through them all.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so they formed their own stupid sorority because Andrea and Brenda, which also didn't get resolved in the episode, did not decide to pledge. Anyway, Brenda is late for the meeting. So shows up just in time for coffee to be served at the Peach Pit, obviously. Where else? And she looks fucking ridiculous when she walks in. I don't know where to start with her look. Actually, I do. Her head. She has her hair in a high ponytail, which fine, it's daytime. But she's still growing out her bangs, so they're like in that, you know, McDonald's Golden Arches front droop situation. She's got on a choker because it's fucking 1993. What else would she have on? But it's like as thick as it's like a suitcase strap around her neck. And then this dress is so short. It's like a black, it's not a halter dress because it's got like crisscrosses in the back. But she's clearly not wearing a bra. It's so short. It's like it's a club dress, as we will later see her in a club. But they're meeting for coffee. It's like the middle of the afternoon. She looks like such an asshole. I'm so infuriated by this look. This look is the Brandon's hair of Brenda. That's how bad it is.
I just assumed she had just climbed off of Stuart, taken a horror bath in his sink. Yes. And gone straight to coffee, because
maybe
that's probably what happened.
Yeah, okay, fair enough. Still, she looks ridiculous. There are comments about this stupid dress. She says that she bought it with her first paycheck from work, and then she tells Andrea and Kelly about Stuart, but apparently they have to go through all of their news according to a rigid order of operations, as we hear in clip number 2.
We will get the dirt on this and all other major matters right after the meeting. Well, how long does the sorority meeting last?
Well, at the Alpha House, the secretary reads the minutes. Then there's old business, new business. Then we adjourn the meeting and we see who got pinned or who lost their virginity.
Well, then I hereby move for this meeting to be adjourned.
I second it.
It's unanimous.
Meeting adjourned. So, did anyone get pinned or lose their virginity over this weekend?
Well, now, Kelly, I lost my virginity a couple years ago.
Well, I was just wondering if you and Stuart had taken a ride on the roller coaster yet.
No. But we're going dancing again tonight, so check back with me tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Andrea, let's face it, we're the last of the dying breed.
Well, from what I hear from Brandon, Andrea and her dorm advisor are getting pretty chummy.
Dan's a nice guy. Is that it? For now, get back to me at the end of the semester.
Mm-hmm. Well, my love life is a mess as usual.
I found out you like John Sears.
I do. Timing just couldn't be worse. I mean, the night I break up with Dylan, he gets carjacked.
We'll get back to Dylan and his whole drama, but like the fact that that's how the clip ends is hilarious to me. Like, Kelly makes it seem like it's so inconvenient to her that Dylan had the temerity to get himself carjacked right after she dumped his ass.
Well, it is annoying. It is. Roll your fucking window up, bruh.
Yeah. It's LA. It's 1993. Get it together.
Yeah. Fuck him.
True.
Tim
anyway.
Kelly. For the next, you know, until the next time she opens her mouth and that baby voice comes out.
Fucking baby voice, I know. So Brenda and Stuart return to Falcons, fucking Falcons, for more bad dancing. He's in a great mood because when he's around her, he gets giddy. They go to a table to talk about his name some more in clip number 3.
Thank you, Mr. Carson.
You know, you can call me Stuart unless you still hate my name.
No, I'm getting used to it, but what if I call you Stewie?
Not supposed to call me that, was my mother.
Ooh, scratch that. What about stew?
As in beef stew? Or?
Well, it's meaty. It's hearty. It sticks to your ribs. Oh, well, that's not working for you either, is it?
My father used to call me Stew. But then he developed some other nicknames.
Like what?
Oh, when I dropped out of college, he called me the bum. When I was trying to promote rock concerts, he called me the hippie. When I tried to get into commercial real estate, he called me the fool. I don't think you want to know what he started calling me when I tried to buy into some racehorses. Oh, man.
I've never seen that side of your father.
Well, his true personality only comes out when he's lecturing me.
How about if I just call you Stuart?
Huh. That's good. Now, could you whisper that in my ear?
I've never seen that side of your father, person I've been dating for 6 days. What?
God.
Also, I was just kidding.
Also, why did we need this whole scene? Like, why is this Stuart thing a thing? It's not a thing.
It's
not a
thing.
There were people named Stuart. Nobody cared. His name was not Herbie.
Right. But even if it was, like, why is she holding it against him? He didn't pick it. It's not his fault. It's also a perfectly fine name. This is stupid. Anyway. Stuart brings Brenda home in her ridiculous outfit. He asks her to invite him in. She reminds him that her parents are home, and he gets a little too pushy for my taste, trying to follow her in, or failing that, to carry her back to his place.
Yeah, seriously, that was gross. Thank you.
And it goes on for a while. Like, she actually looks kind of alarmed. Like, this is an instinct you should not ignore, by the way. Anyway, she thinks things are going so well that she doesn't want to rock the boat by fucking, I guess. Stuart makes a hilarious face, which I put in the visual aids. As Brenda had predicted, both of her parents are sitting on the stairs waiting for her. Now, remember, in the last episode, Brenda proposed that they throw out the curfew, and he agreed, so what the fuck is this? But anyway, apparently they were not clear with each other on that one in clip number 4.
Brenda, this is the third time this week you've come in at 3 a.m.
Well, look at it this way. Consider yourselves lucky I came home at all.
Okay. Then it turns into
you
life
only
goes
try
on.
That one once in my experience.
Yeah. I mean, I do think the curfew thing is dumb, but also, like, it's still their house. Like, you don't get to be that chirpy about it if they would like you home at a particular time. First of all, they should make that clear. And second, you should not be so flippant about it, or unless you want to go and find yourself somewhere else to live. Oh, wait, that's still to come.
Well, yeah, I mean, this whole thing is like, I'm not sure what they think she would be getting up to if she lived in the dorms, which,
right.
Why doesn't she? But that, whatever, dorm has sailed, I guess. Or they, you know, it's not like they didn't have the set. Like, just redress Andrea's room with fewer Stars of David? I don't know. But
you were endangered baby seal posters?
Oh, yeah. Oh my God, that thing.
Anyway.
It's always looming. I swear to God, they move it to like different walls, or she has like 3 of them. Anyway, but it's like, okay, fine. So you're living at home. So, but she is 18, and I'm not sure what they think they can do to control her. So it's like, all right, well, either set the rules, and if she doesn't like them, kick her out, or charge her rent, or suggest that she move into the dorms. I mean,
yeah.
I don't, and this just keeps going, and it keeps giving Brandon excuses to parent her, and it's unacceptable.
So bad. I agree. Speaking of Brandon, the next day on the way to school, Brandon gets nosy about what is going on between Brenda and Stuart. She compliments Stuart on his ability to woo. But then after dinner, she has to be defensive with her parents about how much time she and Stuart are spending together in clip number 5.
Guys, I promised that I would meet him for coffee. We won't be late.
Be firm but gentle, Dad. I think they like each other.
Fuck off.
I'm getting that impression.
I mean, what is the crime here? You set us up. What, do you want us to hate each other?
Good point.
No, that's not the point. But this whole thing with Stuart's going way too fast.
Honey, just give yourselves time to come up for air. I mean, you've got other things going on in your life.
I'm keeping up with everything.
What about him? Larry Carson's a pretty demanding boss. Can't imagine he's too happy about his son gallivanting around every night.
Gallivanting?
Hey, hello? Yes, he's right here. Oh, thank you. Well, that sounds wonderful. It's Larry Carson. He's inviting us to his place in Bel Air for brunch on Saturday.
Is he really?
He called it a triple date.
What is this music? No one cares.
I rest my case.
You do?
Also, that was
Mac the Knife. What is with that music?
I don't know.
That music was for the doorman. He's fed up with everybody.
Yeah. Also, he conveyed a huge amount of information in the 1 second he was on the phone before she tried to hand it off. But whatever. I don't get why this is weird. Anyway, Jim and Cindy arrive at the Carson's giant new money house. They're greeted by a uniformed houseman because new money. Brenda is very cut, high cut one piece is pure 90s. She's in a bathing suit by the pool. You can see it in the visual aids, plus most of her leg, etc. Surprisingly, Mrs. Carson seems to be the original, or at least she is age appropriate for Larry. Her name is Vivian. She and Cindy bond over flowers. Larry calls Stuart rude for not getting out of the pool mid-lap to greet the Walshes, I guess. Weird, but anyway, take note, Larry is mean to his kid. Stuart is braced for a disastrous afternoon. Later still, Larry is bossy, Stuart is immature. In the house, pinball is foreplay for Stuart and Brenda, or for anyone. I mean, it is pinball. It is sexy? Question mark. Stuart knows he must be happy with Brenda because he's back in the family fold and not chafing too much about it. She wants to get it on with all their parents outside, and then they do. And as the brunch is breaking up hours later, Larry says that Brenda is the best thing that ever happened to Stuart. Mrs. C is all for their relationship, too. Larry comes in to retrieve Brenda because her parents are leaving and finds her taking a shower in Stuart's bathroom. Real chill, Brenda. He tells Stuart to get her discreetly downstairs and take her home in deference to Jim's parochial wishes. This entire storyline is gross. I really have nothing else to say about it. Like, everyone in it is acting disgusting, frankly.
Yeah, I agree.
Moving on to our C story.
Wait, no.
Oh, no.
Can we go back? I could think of something to say.
Dondria out of the shadows? So the start of David's radio show is Dan's cue to wake up Andrea. He, by the way, is in bed eating yogurt. This episode is brought to you by the Yogurt Council, apparently. Hey,
thank you. There is someone yogurting in every scene. And it's just like, who? Yeah, the post-coital snack of the college set. Yogurt.
Yogurt. What could be sexier?
No one ever heard of a corn chip.
Guys, it's just part of the culture.
It's all Greek to me.
Studfiania out of control. All right. Dan actually spills some yogurt on his chest and then picks it up with his spoon. And if you don't believe me, I made a gif. He invites Andrea to stay, but she says she can't because she won't wake up in the morning. She's sad that she doesn't get to talk to her friends about their relationship. He reminds her that they both agreed not to, but she is still bummed in clip number 6.
It's not fair. I mean, it's not like you're my teacher anymore. I looked at the college guidelines on resident advisors. They do not have a non-fraternization rule.
No, not specifically, but how it's interpreted is a whole other matter.
Well, no.
What's the worst thing that could happen if they find out about us?
Oh,
they'll put you in a home.
And I don't want to know. Do you?
Okay. First of all,
elder abuse. Sorry. Oh, Dannon.
There would be no gray area about this for various other than Andrea's gray area. Sorry, not sorry.
Oh, God, I wish I were dead.
I'm really not sorry. Sorry. Also, in the middle of this clip, she does this thing where she reaches out to, like, pet his face, and it's like she's holding a prop of a hand, like, to pet him with. I made a good
one. It really
as well.
Is so awkward. It's, like, there's absolutely no chemistry between them, and I don't know if it's, like, that he's 2 feet taller than her, right, or has to, like, pretend to snuggle with her with a scaffold between them because pregnant. I don't know what's going on, but it's not good. What is good. Her bedhead is way better than her, like, normal daytime.
It is. It's so much flatter. I think he does his best. Like, he makes Dan, like, pretty believably schmoopy and cute. Maybe I just had a crush on him and still kind of do, but she is, like, anti-sex. Like, she's just the opposite of sex appeal. And
it's, this is nothing compared to the chemistry vacuum we are about to enter in an episode or two, but we'll get to that later.
God, no kidding. All right. Anyway, this plot line is dumb, but it continues. Dan and Andrea flirt in plain sight at class, pretending not to see each other. Or, sorry, outside of class. When he's, like, sitting on a blanket with some of his fucking TA buddies. But then she sees a couple kissing and is sad and picks a fight about it in clip number 7.
Dan, you better turn away from me. Somebody might be watching us.
You're not being fair.
I'm not. Excuse me, what about you? Every time I think about it, I don't understand it. Why is it we have to hide behind closed doors? I mean, are you so ashamed for your friends to find out that you're going out with a freshman?
Of course not.
Why is it all we can do is do it in your room?
It's just, you know, people talk.
What?
Look, we can't go on this way. What are we going to do?
Look, there's always the bag over the head.
Also, don't say do it in your room. Like, I mean, I don't know what I would rather her say instead. Certainly nothing.
Well, at least she didn't use the word lover.
Thank you.
This time.
Anyway, it's unresolved. Dan and Andrea are then trying to find a movie theater somewhere in the city that they can go to where they won't run into people they know. He is trying, but now she's the one being paranoid in clip number 8.
How about the Santa Monica Promenade? There must be at least a dozen films there.
No, half the students from our dorm will be out there cruising.
Cruising?
Cruising the pedestrian mall.
Cruising?
I don't know.
I don't.
And then
American Graffiti 2, this time it has a home plate shaped hairstyle. Like, bruising?
I don't know. And then, not helping her image with all of us as everyone's grandma, she then proposes that they hang out in his room and play Scrabble, and that is not a euphemism. At the Peach Pit later, Brandon and Steve pretend to care about her life in clip number 9.
What's been going on with you? We haven't seen you around lately.
I've been involved.
Involved?
Involved is good.
Yeah, involved is good. But I feel like I am trying to get into an ice-cold pool step by step. I know I'm going to love it. It's just the getting there that's agony.
Well, call me a guy, but in situations like this, I usually opt for the old cannonball.
The flying cannonball. Into the deep end, preferably naked.
Naked is good.
I'll take that into consideration, thank you.
Just remember, naked is good.
Naked is good.
No, don't be naked. Don't talk about being naked. Just don't. All of this. Don't.
Oh.
But then what she does is has Dan meet her at the student union so that she can walk him to the center of the room and kiss in front of everyone. No one cares. No one's been caring. End of this story for now. Moving on to the B plot. Enter Deshaun. So as we mentioned in our last podcast.
Naked is good.
Seriously.
Finally. Chris Williams, my man. Hello.
So cute. God.
So cute. And so not having any of Brandon, like, forever. Oh, yeah. It's the best.
The other thing is that I forgot that he had played, he was Michael B. Jordan's dad on Friday Night Lights, right?
Yeah.
That's such perfect casting. Like, Michael B. Yeah. Jordan is so the Cress Williams of his generation. That's, like, a huge compliment to them both, really.
Yeah, it really is. Wasn't he also... He was Wallace's dad, too, wasn't he?
Was he? I don't think so.
Veronica Mars?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I was thinking Wallace, who Michael B. Jordan played in The Wire. Too many Wallaces.
Yeah, we saw a dad there. Ooh.
No kidding. Anyway... We're not there yet. Fortunately, though, as we mentioned in the last podcast, Brandon's hair is starting to calm down. You can see it looking, I mean, better. It still looks like the dumb way it looked before he got the brush cut. But anyway, it's in the visual aids. Steve is not worried about an upcoming exam in the sociology class that he and Brandon are both taking, as we hear in clip number 10.
Well, it looks like I'm going to be an all-night study in my notes. You want to come over?
I don't think so. I'm not going to sweat this one.
Steve, you're going to brick this test. You're going to find yourself below his Mendoza line, whatever that is.
I don't think so. You see, the Keg House has this one-hour super cram guaranteed to bring you up to speed on any exam.
1 hour?
Yeah, hey, man, I can let you in on some of these Fred secrets if you like.
I think I'll stay away from your shortcuts, Mr. Legacy Keep, Mr. Begg and Mrs. Teasley to
graduate. Oh, is this why you took down Professor Randall's office hours? Maybe you're planning on sucking up a little bit.
No, I'm not planning on sucking up a little bit. I just don't want to be another face in the crowd. There's nothing wrong with personalizing the student-teacher relationship. I read that somewhere. I think it was Dantec.
Oh, so in other words, you are sucking up.
Ask Andrea about the 1 hour super. No, Nan! I screwed up my own joke by not being able to speak. Anyway, Sarah, would you like to talk about the Mendoza line?
I shouldn't have to talk about the Mendoza line because Brandon, who owned a Twins jersey, because he was that into the local baseball team and was a sports editor.
Yeah, but a shitty one.
Still,
I know
how, like, this is baseball, like, not 101, but like 201, mm-hmm. 171. Like, it's not as basic as, you know, Babe Ruth looked like this and you run the bases this direction. It's like the next class. And for him not to know what it is, and for his professor to like consider him for this teaching job or this tutoring job when he makes such a, well, we'll get to that.
We'll get
I will have
it.
A separate rant about that, but yes. Here's the short version. Brandon not knowing what the Mendoza line is unconscionably shitty writing, or the writers just wanted to make him look like an asshole. Either way, everyone looks like an asshole in the situation.
Yeah.
The Mendoza line is batting 200 or below. Mario Mendoza. One of us didn't have to fucking look it up.
Mendoza!
David! That's goddamn right.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you want to establish that the prof is sportsy, like, have him say that, have kids not know what it means, and then have Brandon tell Steve what it is if, like, it has to be exposited, because I don't know what that is, because I don't know what's anything about baseball.
Yeah.
But,
and
yes.
It's there's no reason for you to know what that is, but there is absolutely no reason for Brandon not to have known what it was since he was 7 years old.
Right.
Because he's sportsy.
Was he a twin? Was Mario Mendoza a twin?
No, actually. Oh, okay. Well, he might have been. He right. played on a lot of teams because he didn't hit very well, so they kept trading him around, but he was good in the field.
Fair enough. Moving on. Brandon comes by
now
the prof's
office.
Now
he's famous forever.
That's true. He's the Miranda of baseball. Anyway, Brandon comes by the prof's office to suck up immediately in clip 11.
So I take it you're into sports, huh?
Yeah, why not? By studying them, I get a lot of free tickets.
I know what you mean. I was the sports editor on my high school newspaper.
Well, good. Oh. So you probably know the origins of the Mendoza line.
Actually, I ran a check on my computer last night and came up empty.
What's Try wrong with your computer?
So what, are you a little uptight about this test?
No, not really, but if you want to show me an advanced copy, I wouldn't complain.
Brandon, you read chapter 2, right?
Sure.
You're already in the Hall of Fame.
What? This is college.
You ran a check on your computer? Did it tell you where Monster Island was, too? And why are you still talking to this fuckknuckle when it's obvious that he doesn't even know what kind of reference the Mendoza line is? Like, okay, do you know what sport the infield fly rule refers to, Tara and or Dave?
Yes, baseball.
Yes, thank you. Do you know what it means?
Not really.
What was it called again?
Most baseball fans don't even know what it means.
The infield fly rule.
Oh, yeah, the infield fly rule, yeah. Well, you you tell them, Sarah.
Infield? You know.
Yeah, it's in a field, in the baseball field.
Yes.
And,
like, if you think it means the NASCAR infield, like, this is not how you suck up to a professor, and this is not how you, the professor, like, glean which students are appropriate to tutor other students.
Yeah. Moving on. Also, you read chapter two and you belong in the Hall of Fame. Like, how fucking easy is this stupid class? I mean, obviously, probably pretty easy since Steve is taking it, but still.
Well, apparently you don't even have to pronounce the name of the department correctly. Sociology.
Seriously.
We should really stop harping on that because there are listeners who are like, in our comments, like,
I know. They
sorry.
Hate him. Sorry. It's him. It's not us. So later, Professor Randall hands Bat the exams. Apparently Steve got a B thanks to the super cram. Brandon got an A+ and a note asking him to meet the prof on a Saturday. And it turns out he has a very important assignment for Brandon, as we hear in clip 12.
Well, it's about one of your classmates. His name is Deshaun Hardell, although really he just likes the letter D on his jersey.
Right. I read about this kid. Hot prospect from Texas, just transferred here from some JC.
Yeah. Unfortunately, his academic game isn't what it should be. To say that this guy needs a little coaching would be an extreme understatement.
So you want me to tutor him?
Well, I'm interviewing 5 students for the job. Look, from your test, obviously you got a firm grasp of the fundamentals, and I know you're a fellow sports pig, so that makes you a candidate for the job.
What?
Cool.
Now, I should tell you something. Deshaun's not dumb. He's got it in him to be a fine student. He's just not motivated. So it could be a struggle.
I'm game.
And there's going to be a little pressure, too. If he's going to be eligible to walk on the court, he's got to get at least a C in my class.
Ah, the Mendoza line.
That's right.
Named after Mario Mendoza, bad, bad, good glove infielder whose lifetime batting average was 200, a statistical measure for major league competence.
If you don't mind, I'll just cancel the other interviews.
You mean I got the job?
Slam dunk.
All right.
Sarah, are you still there or has your head exploded?
Home run? You couldn't just fucking say home run? You gotta mix the metaphors because you're a fucking moron? My last name is Bunting. Do you know what this is like? It's so, like raking Brandon's hair down a chalkboard is what it's like. So let's just finish this fucking plot line so I can throw myself out a window.
All right, well, it's time for Brandon to be
as they do in soccer.
it's time for Brandon to go and meet Deshaun, and in case you were wondering what race he is, the music would like you to know in clip 13.
Yo, give me something to dance.
Oh, Jesus.
Oh, boy.
To be clear, that's just the incidental music that they're playing as we see a shot of, like, Brandon walking into the gym. I swear to God, like, it's 1993.
His most cockwalky cockwalk,
oh, of
by
course.
The way.
Because he's about to meet a sportsman.
That's like
Can we back up for a second? A fellow sports pig, is that a thing that people say? It's so gross.
Sports pig? No.
Yes. Okay.
Not a thing.
I didn't think so.
That intro music sounds like something from, like, Iron Sheik era WWF wrestling, you know, that they would come into the ring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That there was a literal yeah boy in there.
Yeah.
No.
Gross. Boy-y. Anyway, so Deshaun is shooting around in the gym when Brandon comes in to introduce himself. Deshaun takes literally 30 more seconds to shoot, and hard ass Brandon can't handle it in clip 14.
Hardell.
Hey, call me Deshaun, cut.
Deshaun, we gotta hit the books, man. Randall wants us to jump right in and get ready for Monday's class.
But don't hold the ball. Shoot it.
Come on, man. We got studying to do.
Come on now. Only if you can make that shot.
All right. Uh-oh.
Yo. Enter the body double.
Brandon is hard.
Let's go. 2-on-2. I'll take my two. Big bang. There you go. Come
on now. Basketballs.
And more rap music.
I
love that it was like sex guitar. Wait, scrit, 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 scream.
Yep. And I really wish
that. I hate this fucking show sometimes. I really do.
I wish that the back shot of him had been like Cheryl Swoops. Like, it had just been someone who's clearly not Jason Priestley at all making this 3-point shot.
Muggsy Bogues, who would still be towering over him.
Anyway, that's Brandon's storyline. Moving on
Oh God, they just keep getting worse.
I know. Dylan, get your gun, plus Kelly, whatever. Okay.
Hey,
so,
do you think we're done with the racist music cues? Just wondering.
Sarah, I'm so glad you asked. When we first reunite with Dylan in this episode, he has heard that the cops have found his car and he and Brandon are on their way to go and get it, and the impound lot is in a bad part of town. And in case you weren't sure, the music lets you know in clip 15. Chopping up the park, no, I got it for the dark. Biting the gas, the truck, the car, talking up the truck, get that money. Oh, God. This fucking show. So terrible. Also.
I just.
Yes.
I mean.
Like, it's not bad enough that they've had, like, four characters of color have speaking lines in the show in 4 seasons. But, like, then on top of that, to put in these music cues is really, like, so offensive. Anyway, we also have to watch Brandon park his stupid car and then, like, walk across the seats. Like, that's your car. What? Get out like
again.
A normal person.
Again.
Again. Anyway, there's a shocking amount of business surrounding the logistics of Dylan picking up this car, which turns out not to be there, which Dylan does not handle well in clip 16.
Seems there was a little mistake, boys. The car we recovered was a Honda Civic.
Whoa, wait, you're telling me that I came down here to this hellhole for nothing? You don't even have my car?
Sorry, there was a screw-up.
A screw-up? In the police department? I'm shocked.
Hey, I'm talking to you!
Listen, he got carjacked a couple nights ago. He's just not himself.
Yeah, well, you tell your buddy to cool it before he gets into some real trouble.
Yeah, I'll do my best.
Okay, a few things. First, shout out Honda Civic, the car Dylan fucking should have bought when he was car shopping in the last episode.
And notoriously the most stolen car, at least in New York City, for like 15 years in a row. Might still
Is that
be.
True?
Yeah.
Honda Civic, really?
Yeah, they're apparently very easy to, like, you know, the metal thing that the cops use to help you when you're locked out? Apparently it'll respond to pretty much anything, like long blades of grass. A straw from a big gulp, like they're very
strong,
they're just very easy
looks,
to break into. And like the parts are in high demand because, you know, big seller.
Yeah,
so.
Sure. That's what you used to have, is it not? The Civic? Isn't that what you used to have?
Me?
No, Sarah.
Oh,
I had an Accord.
Oh, okay. All right. Anyway, the other thing that happens is when yes,
you were spoiled
because their car, you know, the cars, right? Well, you put the spoilers on.
I get it.
Yeah.
That's
right.
A good one.
Fuck off, Cole.
What you can also hear in that clip of Brandon and Dylan talking to the guy at the impound lot is that when Dylan finds out his car's not there, he steps like 3 steps away and kicks a pylon. Wow, what a fucking tough guy. I made a gif of it because I know you're not going to believe me that happened. It did. It's ridiculous.
And my favorite thing is Brandon being like, he's not himself. I'm like,
no he is
pretty much right down the fairway. Sports reference, Brandon. That was golf.
Pretty sure that was hockey. Anyway, at Jim's office, Dylan and Jim discuss the fact that the Porsche is probably gone forever. Jim tells Dylan there probably wasn't anything he could have done differently given the circumstances, but Dylan is not so sure in clip 17.
Well, I don't know, Jim. I mean, I could have jammed through the light, you know. I could have honked my horn. I could have backed up and knocked a guy over, and I didn't do any of those things, man. I froze. I thought maybe the kid was lost, you know? And he whips out this gun, got the barrel right in my face, and I'm looking down that little hole. I saw my whole life in that hole.
Fight a nickel.
But he didn't care. He was ready to kill me, and there wasn't a damn thing I could do about it.
Just let it happen.
You know, it might not be such a bad idea to get counseling. It really helped Brenda.
Actually, I got something else in mind.
Mind, Jim?
I don't know what, like, you froze because you were scared, like it's a normal human response. I don't, we're about to find out that what he has in mind is a gun, because then we see him at a gun range fucking shooting like he thinks he's Wyatt Earp, like one-handed, like an asshole. Yeah,
my There's notes a literally that say well. Wyatt Twerp.
That's much better. But like, what would you have done differently if you had a gun in your glove compartment? Like, you probably still would have frozen. And even if you hadn't, if you went to reach for it, the guy would have shot you if the gun was even loaded, which who knows? Like, I don't understand how this is a solution. Obviously, it's not, but it's still stupid.
Yeah, unless you're like driving with your left hand and just pointing the gun out the window with your right hand. Like, that's... No,
yeah.
That's not how that works.
No. Anyway, meanwhile, Kelly and John Sears are having a flirty lunch of yogurt. What else? There's a picture in the visual aids. He wants to know when he gets to take her on a real date, and she teasily says that she'll consider it if he's nice, in a baby voice, obviously, which of course is when Dylan appears to wander into the middle of a public art exhibit and start playing with it. The art, not anything else. John Sears notices her watching Dylan, and this happens.
I thought you broke up with McKay.
I did, but right now I need to talk to him.
Kelly, I'm not just doing donuts here, am I? You know, spinning my wheels, chasing my vestigial tail.
You're a funny guy.
Not really. Also, my favorite thing about John Sears is watching Dave's face during his clips. Dave just looks so confused by everything he says. Dave did not take Smooth Talking Gigolo 101 at Pepperdine. Anyway, vestigial tale, I don't know. Kelly then goes over to Dylan, who is a bitch about it, in clip 19.
Well, it's good to see you back on campus.
And why is it good to see me back on campus?
You're right, it's not.
Don't do this, Dylan. I still want to be part of your life.
Why?
Kel, what do you want to do something like that?
Well, my life sucks and you know it.
Dylan!
What do you mean say? Huh? None of this has been easy on me, I tell you that. But I'm not going to get myself in another situation where some little punk with a big gun can do a number on me.
Oh, God.
Have you ever noticed how often Dylan is like, what do you want me to say? Like,
yeah,
actually, how about this? I'm leaving forever. I no longer speak English and I'll lose your phone number. How about that? Scronerific.
Yeah, she's trying to be nice. Like, you know, if you don't want to talk to her, just say goodbye and walk away. Maybe
spot her in the quad and performatively fuck with a public art installation like a total 6-year-old asshole.
I know. It's not a pinwheel. This is not Ralph's. Like, get your shit together. That's not a toy. Anyway, God, after establishing that the custody arrangement between Jackie and Mel is not going great, Kelly tells Jackie that Dylan is on her way over to take her on a date. Why? To a gun range. Why? Jackie has a hilarious reaction, which I gift, and you can see it in the visual aids. And then Mel shows up early when Jackie is still there, and he's brought his very young girlfriend, Nina. Jackie does not handle it with grace. Mel tries to get Kelly on his side, which is not a successful gambit, and then David is directing his most abusive tone at people he's not dating, once again, in clip 20.
Kelly, they were gonna meet sooner or later.
You are just as bad as your father, aren't you?
Well, you're just as neurotic as your mother.
Excuse me, can I say something here?
No.
Comedy.
Both of
I
you,
just
like,
can't.
All of you shut the fuck up and let's focus on the important thing, which is of the gazillion sets of twins that must have tried out for the role of Aaron, why did they pick the one that was not just picked up at the foot of the ugly tree, having hit every branch of the way down, but apparently was fired out of a cannon through the ugly tree. I mean, God
She's
bless this child and her sister.
Lovely
but,
now, yes.
And I am speaking as an actually hideous toddler. Like, I don't think there are even any pictures. I made sure they were all destroyed. He's not cute.
If- if any were taken, because if you're really as ugly as you said, maybe your parents were like, we're good.
There is one that's really classic. The first day of my life, my mother is sitting up in bed, like, just drinking champagne, I think straight from the bottle. God bless. Get it, Barb. And my grandmother has me on her lap and is looking at the camera with this, like, pleading face. It's like, oh, yeah.
Oh,
can you?
No one looks good on day one of their lives. Babies are like, it really takes a good, I'm going to say like 6 weeks for a baby to stop looking squished and horrible.
The only person that probably ever looked good on day one was Winston Churchill, because he never stopped looking like that, you know?
Grew right into that face. That's true. Yeah.
No, who was a very cute baby? Our birthday boy this week, David D. Cole, who there's a picture of him from when he was like, how old were you in that picture?
A couple days old.
He has more hair in this picture than he does now. He's such a, seriously, the hairiest baby that ever lived.
Can I tell a little racist story about that, since we've been talking about racism on this?
Sure. He was, but seriously, he was like boy Suri Cruz, like that much hair at just born, like a werewolf.
So was my brother, and he has not had a strand that he's let grow anyway in like 10 years, but he was like wolf baby. It's crazy.
Yeah.
To hear my mother tell the story that when I was born, the nurse said something to this effect.
Oh, dear.
Wow, that's a lot of hair. Are you sure he's not a wop?
Ooh.
A what?
A wop?
Do you not know that term?
You don't know that? No. Yeah, it's a slur
It's a bad word for Italians.
Yeah. No, I know the term.
Although, I will say this.
Oh.
I just didn't hear what you said. I'm sorry I made you repeat it. Remember this whole exchange we had about this? Never mind.
Anyways, so in her defense, not really. But like, just here's a little more information that I found amusing as a child.
I mean, it would have never been okay, but especially not in the early 70s. Like, it's not an okay term.
So the town I grew up in, the Welland Canal that connects to Great Lakes runs through it. And it was basically built with Italian labor back in the, you know, the whatevers. So the town is very Italian.
The Italian tees? Oh, yes.
Yeah. Every year, the Holy Rosary Church down on Sullivan Avenue has this big dance festival thing. And anybody want to guess what the whole town called it?
Oh, no.
Doo-wop?
Close.
The wop-hop?
The wop-hop.
Of course.
Yeah.
Doo-wop's so much better. As part Dago, I really feel that they could have upped their racist wordplay game there just a titch.
Ooh.
Ciao, boys!
See, this ignorant nurse.
We need some accordion music or something.
She just didn't know that the Welsh are at least as hairy as the Italians. I mean, let's be fair, right? Right, Dave? Is that offensive?
I don't know. I've said my bit.
All right. Okay, moving on. Let's go to the gun range. What a perfect transition. Kelly is creeped out. Things don't really improve when Dylan tries to involve her more in clip 21.
Clip 21.
All right. Your turn.
Sorry, you know I'm for gun control.
Yeah, well, if you want to control your gun, use both hands. Come on, you'd be a fool not to learn this.
No, don't call me that.
Kelly, there are 2 million handguns in Los Angeles alone. How soon before one of them's pointed at you? Now, come on, do one clip. It won't kill you. There you go. Get it like that. Square yourself up to the target like I did. Now, just aim and squeeze the trigger.
It's gonna be loud, isn't it?
Yeah, but just expect it. The first one's always the worst.
Where do I aim?
Hit the target. Go for the center.
At your head.
Hey, what do you want? You want to be a statistic? You want to be a victim? I mean, Kelly, the writing is spray painted on the wall. You got about as much chance of taking a bullet as being in a car accident. Or am I not supposed to worry about that, huh? That's not my problem. I should let other people worry about you.
I'm worried about you.
Don't be. I'm getting pretty good at this.
What?
What was up
douche?
With the Tubular Bells soundtrack underneath that whole thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think it was supposed to be Halloween-y. It's so stupid. First of all, why did he invite her there? Second of all, why did she go? You guys broke up. You both know what seeing other people meant. It meant seeing people other than each other.
Yeah, go clean John Sears' gun. He been waiting.
Word. So she goes out into like the lobby or whatever while Dylan empties a clip in quick succession because he's such a badass now. And she flinches with every shot. And then he comes out to the foyer and won't let her leave no matter how much she asks, because that's the theme of this episode. I don't get it. It's not okay. Later, Kelly summons Brandon and Steve to the Peach Pit to talk about Dylan's new obsession, and Brandon immediately dismisses Kelly's concerns because he doesn't know what she does, but then when she tells him about the gun range, Jason Priestley has to weigh in character as Brandon in clip 22.
Listen, Kel, I grew up hunting. Owning a gun is not the worst thing a guy can do. Besides, it's just a fact of life. Ever since the riots, people in LA have been arming themselves.
Yeah. I get it, because this is the Wild West, and it's the good guys and the bad guys killing each other every day, right?
I wouldn't go that far.
Well, maybe Dylan would. Guys, he's acting like he's Rambo or something.
When he shaves his head and starts talking to himself in the mirror, then we'll worry.
Brandon, you've seen him. He is not in a good way.
I'll admit it. He's had some bad moments.
Bad moments? I haven't seen him this angry, including when his father died. I mean, I'm just afraid that he's going to hurt himself or somebody else.
All right, assuming you're right, what do you want us to do about it?
Just go over there, talk to him, see for yourself, because he sure will not listen to me.
Just a reminder, in case you forgot, Jason Priestley, around this time, starred in a gun safety video for the NRA, so his feelings are known on this topic and also bullshit. I don't know why they have to try and talk her out of, like, can you just go over and talk to him and make sure he's okay? Eh, he's probably fine. Fuck off, both of you. Anyway.
Well, and what does growing up hunting have to do with this, you know, former substance abuser and completely unsupervised trust fund baby probably trying to buy a gun? Like,
with a history of depression also.
Yeah.
Like, no part of this is good news for anybody. But whatever. Finally, Brandon agrees. Kelly then comes home. David is already prepared for Kelly to start a fight because he and Donna are looking after Aaron when Mel is supposed to. And it turns out David is right in clip 23.
So how did Kelly end?
You're babysitting?
Well, it's just for the afternoon.
Oh, this is incredible. Mel strikes again, huh? He dumped her on you?
Look, just yell all you want and get it over with, okay?
Yeah, I will, because I think your father is really sick.
Yeah, well, your mom's a space case half the time.
At least she's trying, David.
Yeah, well, so is he.
You guys, please.
Aaron is right between them.
She started it.
Oh, yeah, I started it. No, neither of you started it. This is your parents' war, not yours.
The more you know.
Must be Epiphany o'clock.
She's right.
Yeah.
I think that for Aaron's sake, we need to both remember not to fight our parents' battles.
Also, put the sheets over the mirror.
So mean. You really hate this kid.
I just don't get it.
Yeah.
Like, it literally is the child's only job is to be cute and sort of look like she could be. Like, she does look like she could be Kelly's sister, at least.
She does.
But, like,
she
there
does.
Were no other blonde children in Los Angeles.
Moving on. Speaking of blonde children, Dylan and his sensible new Jeep come back from the beach to find Steve and Brandon waiting with a pizza. It looks like Dylan has gotten a haircut since the start of the episode, by the way, which you can see in the visual aids. Steve brings up the gun range, and Dylan guesses that Kelly sent them over to talk to him, which Steve confirms in a time period appropriate and classy manner in clip 24.
She thinks you've gone Waco.
Is that even... Didn't that compound blow up, though? Like, I'm not even sure that... It's, but...
Well, he says, the rest of the clip is that he says stockpiling firearms.
Oh, okay, and he's paranoid. Yeah, all right, fair enough. Yeah.
Anyway, Dylan says that Kelly's overreacting because she feels guilty, but on his way to the kitchen, he turns over a copy of Guns and Ammo on the table. Uh-oh.
Sure enough, is super obvious about it. Every page flapping noisily. Good job, Foley.
And sure enough, the next thing we see is Dylan shopping for a handgun in our final clip.
Hold on, Mr. McKay. Danny never told me your age. Unless you're over 21, I'm afraid I can't sell you a handgun. Sorry,
this is America.
Wait, you tell me I can't buy peace of mind?
How about a shotgun?
I don't think it'll fit in my glove compartment. Listen, buddy, this city's full of 15-year-olds running around with MAC-10 street sweepers. I don't think anybody's checking their ID.
Hey, believe me, I sympathize with your situation, but I can't help you. At least not here. But after okay. hours, there are a lot of guys who can get you anything you want.
Okay. See you after hours.
Souvenirs. Bought tickets. Okay, jeez.
Sometimes I let them play out just because I know that it irritates you so much. I mean, it's not my fault. It's the music cue, but like, that's not even as long as it went.
No,
like,
it isn't. So it's aggressive. Still going on somewhere.
It is. Kenny's still in the booth rocking out on his Fender. Anyway, that's the episode. Let's wrap it up with our MVP. I'm going to say Donna, the only person who had any sense in her apartment once again, and pointed out to David and Kelly that maybe the scary adult shouldn't be having a screaming fight in front of the sub 2-year-old child.
Yeah, that's a solid choice. I, as I will probably be doing with every episode containing this gentleman, am voting to Sean Hardell because he's great.
Oh, good. Yes. Also a good call. Who immediately can tell that Brandon is full of shit. That's my favorite thing.
Yeah,
about
I know.
Him,
he just like grins so and right. is like, nah.
I know. Oh, I love him. All right, least valuable player. I mean, I'm tempted to say Mario Mendoza, but instead,
I was
going to
nominate myself for making fun of a little kid. Also, yeah, technically, works. It's two little kids. Right. But no, it's Brandon. Dylan.
Oh yeah, Dylan. It's hard. It's a tie. They're both such shitheads. Like, but since Brandon was not actually the one who tried to get violent this episode, let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
5 ways from this episode, Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. They're really handing it to us this time. Bad to try to buy a gun illegally. Dangerous to keep one if you, for all the reasons Sarah said, have a history of substance abuse, are unsupervised, and have a history of depression.
It is bad also to be just touching art. Could fall on you and kill you.
That art could. It was really pointy. Yeah. Bad to invite your ex-girlfriend to watch you shoot guns when you know that she's not into that, and also it's not even any of her business anymore.
Well, and given Dylan-ness, I feel like it's pretty bad for him to buy a gas guzzler instead of something a little more efficient.
True. I do like that car, though. It's good looking. In the last episode, when he said he was going to buy a Ford Bronco, I was like, yeah, good call. Yeah. I'm the one person that watched the People versus O.J. Simpson and was like, man, those Broncos look good. Like, I know. It's really not the point of it, but I do like them.
There is one that is like belongs to someone in my neighborhood. And I'm like, you know, it's really a pity because they're handsome cars. But isn't the Jimmy exactly the same thing?
I think so. And you know, just don't get a white one. Anyway,
yeah. Anyway, on. No one cares. I'm the LVP. Next.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's time for our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book, Shannon Doherty Exposed. We're done with Deed Factor. Moving on to Bachelor number 3. Does anyone remember who this might be from Shannon's dating past?
Ashley Hamilton?
Oh, we're not there yet.
Oh,
actually,
wow.
That might have been after this book was published. No, in fact, it is, believe it or not, Judd?
Oh, yeah!
Hirsch. Just kidding. Judd Nelson.
here we go.
Shannon was turning more than the letters, however, when she began to engage in behind-the-back tricks outside of her relationship with Dean. I don't know what any of that means. To audition her latest contestant in the ongoing dating game, Shannon flipped the cushions of the casting couch over for Judd Nelson during the filming of Blindfold. But to Judd, who had dated Uma Thurman, Shannon was nothing more than a satellite in his ongoing star search for fame and fortune. April's showers quickly turned into a monsoon when filming for Blindfold began. In the movie, Shannon's character is involved with her psychiatrist, played by Nelson, sounds like a winner, at some point during the first few weeks of shooting. the two actors found themselves involved long after the cameras had stopped rolling. And though Nelson probably knew about Doherty's relationship with Factor, he obviously didn't care. When the High Rollers returned from Hawaii, Shannon was sporting an expensive ring and a cheap black eye. Yeesh. Factor Ooh. Swore she bruised it when she slipped and fell on a doorstep, but Doherty told her father, Tom, that she'd been hit by a surfboard. Oh, boy. And what was riding on the wave of destruction? Tom Doherty believed it was former Hollywood brat packer Judd Nelson. Dean felt she was fooling around with him, Tom explained. And as the black and blue ring around her eye faded, the ringing of wedding bells did also as Shannon pursued her new game. Once again, the price was definitely right for Shannon as she started bankrolling her affair with Judd on Dean's credit cards. Let's Ooh. Leave it there because this shit's juicy. Also, they're really arch about, you know, what seems like a domestic abuse situation. Although I suppose so am I. So who's really the least valuable player? Me and you.
Yeah. No, it's me. They're adults. Give me something to dance to. Worst transition ever. Next time I'm Get With This, Brandon meets an older woman, Andrea meets another man, Brenda meets with some disapproval of her romantical plans, and Brandon almost meets his maker when paranoid mini Nugent Dylan almost shoots him by mistake. But is the mistake the fact that he shot him or that he missed? What you shouldn't miss is our visual aids, which you can find for this episode and all the episodes of Again With This on our website at previously.tv. You can follow us on Twitter at PreviouslyTV. You can follow me, Sarah D. Bunting, on Twitter at Tomato Nation. You can follow my esteemed colleague and co-host, Tara Ariano, at Tara Ariano. And as for our producer,
David!
You can find him on Instagram at Glark. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.